Hello, everyone, and welcome to minute 45 of season 10 of Movie Right Minute, the daily podcast, where we hijack our way through the 1974 action thriller, The Taking of Pilot 123, 1 minute at a time. I'm Rob, and joining me once again to finish off the week is from the Forgotten Film Cast, Todd Liebenow. I think I forgot
Hello.
To. Oh, there you go. There you are.
Great to be here once again.
Yes, yes. Always fun to have you back on here. We like to have tangents that sometimes take us very strange places.
I'm happy to oblige.
I'm glad that you're happy to oblige. All right. So, minute 45. Begins with Warren leaving with the commissioners, and ends with Green not really being sure about everything. So we get to finish off the quote that you talked about yesterday, Loving, where Warren basically says, "No, I'll call. You'll take an hour trying to knock down the interest rates." Do you think that that's supposed to be like some sort of racial slur, or he's just talking about the fact
that's interesting. I hadn't thought about that. I mean, this minute, I mean, if that's the case, in this minute we get two references to racial things, because we also have the transit cop referring to how he's not easy to spot in the dark. Mm-hmm.
but it's a little different.
I hadn't thought about that with the first one, but I mean, it could be it was not something they shied away from as much in this era.
No, I mean, the guy's name is Sid, so Sidney sounds very Jewish. Let's put it that way.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So it could be something thrown out there. This movie, according to today's standards, is nowhere considered PC, which is fine. Mm-hmm. It goes back to, the same year this movie came out, that's when Blazing Saddles came out. And, we talked about that earlier in the week. That isn't necessarily a movie that is couth, as they say.
yeah but I mean that one is a perfect example too of the way things change in terms of what is considered acceptable and what isn't. I mean, I referenced when we talked about that a few days ago that we used to watch the TV version, and in the TV version they edited out the fart noises,
right?
But one thing that they left in that TV version, this would have been airing around 1983, 84, was all the N-words.
Yes.
Broadcast TV. So things have certainly changed.
Yeah. True. And they start walking out of the room, and he goes, "Look, Sid." And then Al just sighs. And then he goes, "Jesse." He's now in the confines of his own home with no one else around, and he wants to get approval from his wife. Mm. And he goes, "I think I handled it all right, huh?" He looks at him and goes, "A regular for Fiorella LaGuardia."
This is another moment where it's like, you see the mayor kind of trying to get approval, trying to build himself up. Again, it just kind of paints him as being kind of weak and all that. I did that pretty good, right?
Exactly. Okay, do you know who Fiorello LaGuardia was?
Of course, mayor of New York, 99th mayor of New York, according to what I looked up.
Ooh, very good.
Yeah. And of course, I mean, it's one of those cases where, for the most part, my brain associates that name with the airport because we hear the name of the airport thrown around. But of course, I knew it was named after a mayor.
Right.
But yeah, as I knew you would ask, I looked a little bit because I was like, all right, I basically just know this guy's name. I don't know all that much about him. I know he was a mayor. One thing I did see, and I assume this is why they named the airport after him, was that he had been a pilot in World War One. So that's probably where that connection was made when they named the airport, I'm guessing.
We'll get there. We'll get there.
Yeah.
So, first of all, he was ranked in 1993 as the number one best big city mayor in American history. So that in
Okay.
itself is pretty impressive. He was mayor for 12 years from 1934 to 1946. He was born in 1882 and passed away in 1947. So I guess it's a good thing that he wasn't mayor anymore for another term. Wouldn't necessarily have been helpful. He was born in Sicily. So his original name was Fiorello Raphael Enrico LaGuardia. And he basically Americanized it to Henry. Sorry, he was born in Greenwich Village. His family came from Sicily. Sorry.
Oh, okay.
So his family actually fought as part of Giuseppe Garibaldi's red shirts in the mid-1800s. So his father was from Italian descent and his mother was Jewish. So he would give speeches in both Italian and Yiddish in order
Wow.
to deal with strikes in 1912 when he was he wasn't really doing much at that point politics wise. He was trying to get into things, but yeah, that's like amazing to think of the fact that this is 1912. So how old was he? He was born in 1882. So he was 20 years old when he was already dealing with politics around there. He became a lawyer in 1910, and he became a Mason in 1913. And then he started working for the Attorney General of New York in 1911 and served as a Deputy Attorney General from 1915 to 1917. He then formed a publishing company in 1925, and but the magazine failed and he basically lost all of his money in the whole thing. And then he became a Republican and started, he supported Taft in 1912. And then he helped, he refused to support John Perrow Mitchell as the mayor in 1913, even though Mitchell was being supported by the Republicans. And, in 1919, he ran as for the to be the president of the New York City Board of Aldermen, which happened because Al Smith basically resigned in order to become governor of New York at the time. Al Smith, who just a few years later would be the first Catholic presidential nominee in 28. In 28, and basically he won, and then he became he became an alderman at that point, and he supported Harding in 1920 for his election, and then he wanted to run for mayor in 1921, but he was against the current Republican mayor Miller, which basically they didn't want to give him denomination at the time. But there was too much politics going on around the side, I guess, for him to deal with that. And then, so what he did was he ran for the U.S. House of Representatives. And he was in the House from 1923 to 1933, which again is pretty impressive that he was able to. A few years earlier, he served one term from 1917 to 1919 also, before he became, you know, the head of the aldermen. And then in 1933, that's when he decided that he's going to be running for mayor. And he did a very nice job, obviously. Because he ran in 1929 and didn't win. He won the Republican nomination, but he lost the general election by a landslide. And then in 1933 he ran against Jimmy Walker, who was the
Jimmy Walker, JJ from JJ. Good Times. That's Dynamite.
So sorry. Yes, that's okay, perfect. I was thinking that too. So Jimmy Walker was the mayor who basically needed to resign because of a scandal, and LaGuardia wanted to replace him, so he was able to get the nominations. And then the incumbent mayor was a man named John O'Brien, and he ended up beating him because everyone was looking for someone more honest than you know, the scandal ridden ones before. And apparently he had five main goals when he ran for office: to restore the financial health and break free from the bankers' control, expand the federally funded work relief program for the unemployed, end corruption in government and racketeering in key sectors of the economy, replace patronage with merit-based civil service, and modernize the infrastructure, especially transportation and parks. And within the first 100 days, he was able to do four. He was able to get the first one done. He was able to get the first four goals done out of the five. Which is pretty impressive.
Yeah.
So yeah, he as was said before, he's known as being one of the very best mayors in U.S. history, because he was able to make so many changes in everything that was going on in New York. He actually also had two wives. His first wife died in 1921, and his second wife was a woman who volunteered on his campaign and ended up becoming his secretary after his election, and eventually married her in 1929, and they actually adopted two children. One of them actually just passed away in 2024, at the age of 94. Wow. They had a son named Eric Henry LaGuardia. Yeah, so once again, you know, we talked about the LaGuardia Airport, and yeah, there's also a LaGuardia Community College that's named after him. There is a because he loved music, so there was a there was a creation of a high school of music and art in 1936, which has now been renamed the Fiorella LaGuardia High School of Music and Art and Performing Arts. Is that what they had in Fame?
No, I don't think that's the thing. One of the things that I saw when I was looking at stuff was that in during World War II, FDR named him the first director of the Office of Civilian Defense.
Interesting.
So yeah, he did a lot for
Yes,
sure.
it's very prominent in New York.
And I mean, how many other famous Fiorellos are there in the world? I mean, he's the only one
That's
I
true.
know.
Yeah, I haven't heard that. Yeah. Yeah, the airport that is now known as LaGuardia was originally opened as the New York Municipal Airport. And they ended up calling it in 1947. They started calling it the LaGuardia Airport when they named it after him. Was that before or after he died? It must have been
It
right.
was right after, I think.
Yeah, that makes sense. Right. He was apparently only 5 feet tall. He was considered
Yes, I saw that too. He
relatively
wasn't
short.
a
So he died of pancreatic cancer on September 20th, 1947, at the age of 64. And he's interred in Woodlawn Cemetery, which we've talked about. Interesting. There you go, in the Bronx. So yeah, his wife thinks that Jenny Jesse thinks that he's a Fiorello LaGuardia. Probably not.
No. LaGuardia never dumped his used tissues on plastic plants, so you know.
You never know. They might have found them in Gracie Mansion, and they would have said, "Hey, these came from LaGuardia."
Maybe that's why she was complaining about it before. She was like, you know, because she said, you know, other mayors are gonna have to live here someday. Maybe she remembers the day where she had to clean up all of Fiorello LaGuardia's dirty, grimy, snotty tissues that he left lying all over the mansion.
Maybe,
Might
maybe.
have happened.
LaGuardia snot. And then we're actually going to leave Gracie Mansion, and we get the dark tunnels of the subway, and we see a whole bunch of policemen moving around in the shadows, and they do a great job of panning the shot to the right, and then we see Officer James, who we haven't seen since last week, and he goes, "Patrolman James calling operations." And then we hear Rico on the other side. "This is Patron. What's going on?" And we know that he's slightly concerned at this point. Because, "Lieutenant, there's a lot of feet moving around out there in the dark. I can hear 'em. I figure it's a couple of dozen sharpshooters and snipers. Am I right?" And Rico goes, "I wouldn't be surprised." Goes, "Yeah, well, Lieutenant, you make damn sure they know I'm standing here between them and the hijackers. I'm not all that easy to see in the dark."
This is where I wonder, shouldn't the NYPD and the transit cops be communicating a little bit better with each other?
My impression is that there is some sort of, I mean, come on, we alluded to it last week when what's the name, Costello, mentions to Garber, that he's got to deal with with everyone trying to take credit for this. So I can sort of understand that.
Yeah. Well, and I mean it's a theme you see in many movies where it's like there are these different organizations that all have jurisdiction over different things and they just never seem to always completely want to get along and cooperate. You know, it's always about, oh no, you know, that's my caller, you know, that whole type of thing, you know. So yeah, it's kind of par for the course when it comes to parties that should be working together not working together as well as they should.
Sure. And basically, at this point, the shot changes again, and we get to see Mr. Blue, who's doing a crossword. Now, do you think this is the crossword puzzle? Do you think he confiscated this from one of the hostages? Because we saw at the beginning of the movie that one of the hostages was doing a crossword puzzle, or did he bring this one up?
Oh, I don't know. That's a good question. I hadn't thought about that. I mean, I'm not a crossword puzzle kind of guy.
No,
They're
me
just
neither. Yeah.
a lot of
I
times they get
prefer word
too tough
churches.
for me. I mean, I don't know. I mean, like I love doing trivia and things like that, but crossword puzzles, I don't know. They add a different another element that just it makes my brain hurt. My
Yeah,
wife does them a lot, but I don't do them
I
very
remember a
much.
few years ago I used to do the New York Times kids crosswords, which were hard enough for me. And they were like theme based, you know, like you'd have one about the presidents, and you'd have one about states, and you'd have one about I don't even remember all the different things. And I found those fun to do, but I don't think they have them online anymore that you can do them so easily. But you know, that even doing the kids' crosswords, Will Short's, you know, is well above my intelligence level to be doing his, to be able to figure out his crosswords.
Well, and this part of things is another one of those things that adds color to the movie. You know, I like
Yes.
that Blue is always working on a crossword puzzle, during the downtimes or what have you. It's a fitting thing because there are certain people that they're just very religious about that sort of thing. You know, they've got to do the crossword puzzle every day. I mean, today it's more like Wordle, which I don't do Wordle. My wife and my son, they do Wordle. And I mean, it's the type of thing where it's a little contest between them every day to text each other with who got it first and that type of thing. But that it's the same way with crossword puzzles. Some people are just very religious. Don't touch my crossword puzzle. I've got to do the daily crossword puzzle each day, and that's the kind of guy that Blue is, I guess.
That's right. And again, if this isn't something that he took from one of the hostages, it means he prepared well in advance and brought, you know, he knew to bring a crossword puzzle with him, you know, to pass the time, you know, that type of thing. Because again, he's got a pen, he's doing, and you can even see when the crossword book is opened that there's like writing scrawled on the left-hand side of the page. You know, like maybe hints, clues, I don't know, something like that. And then Green starts to talk to Blue and he goes, "Nothing yet." And he shakes his head and he goes, "Boy, they're sure taking their time, aren't they?" And then Blue says calmly, "Don't worry. They're gonna have to pay." "Well, suppose they don't." "Well, then a lot of people are gonna die, aren't they?" And then the minute ends with a shot of Green's face, where he just like shakes his head, and it makes you know, think to yourself, okay, this guy once again is saying to himself, "What the hell did I get myself into?"
This is where the cracks start to form, and it's a cool moment there. It's kind of funny given where the movie ends up going at the end that the one who had the problem with things is the one that, spoiler, actually makes it to the end of the movie.
Right.
But
That's true. No, but I think that's part of the charm of it, you know, that he's the one who, you know, he's not the violent one. So,
And I mean, and this scene too. I mean, one of the great things about it is just the coldness
yes.
of Mr. Blue's responses, and that where you do. I mean, between these two actors, two great actors, by the way, Margaret Balsam and Shaw. It's just. You see the one. It's a moment where, as an audience member, we're enlightened to the fact that oh, this guy is not a hardened criminal. This guy is not necessarily has thought through the ramifications of what he's doing. And here's the other one who's just very cold. And if this is what we got to do, this is what we got to do.
Right.
It's an interesting character moment for both of them.
Exactly. Yeah, I like the way that they play off of one another. But then again, Blue plays off really well with Garber too. So,
Yeah.
Green and Garber don't really get along so well.
Well, he does give him a Gesundheit every now and then,
That's true. That's true.
you know, so.
He's politely giving Gesundheits through the door.
Right.
Right. Did you have anything else you want to say about this particular minute or anything about the movie in general?
No, I think we covered it.
All right.
I mean,
Excellent. All right. So every Friday we have a segment called Fun City Friday, which my guests will give their top five movies that are somehow set around in near containing New York City. So once again, why don't you start with your number five and work your way up?
so this was challenging because there's so many movies that take place in New York, and you know, it's I tried to think about New York playing a role in it, you know, and not like being necessarily where you could have done this anywhere, but it just happened to
Okay.
be in New York. So
Fair enough.
and the first one I did is probably the most obscure one of them, though it is a Woody Allen movie and it does have Tony Roberts in it, but I went with Radio Days because I've always loved that movie and I love kind of the way it looks at the city as well. So the others I have here are much bigger. So my number four is Rear Window, which I think is a great kind of look at the, you know, the neighborhood type of a vibe in New York. Three, King Kong. Two, When Harry Met Sally, and one, of
I don't think
course,
I've ever
is.
heard of When Harry Met Sally. What's that?
Yeah, no, I didn't. I mean, I talked to some guy about it once upon a time for, you know, like five episodes of something. I don't know. But anyway, my number one is Ghostbusters.
You come on.
Yeah.
That just completely shocks me.
Oh, no, I know. I want to surprise you every now and then.
Yes, of course. Sorry. You are the second person to mention Ghostbusters. You're not the first person to
It won't be the last, I'm sure.
mention. Probably not. Probably not. All right. Excellent. So we will now play one final time the daily game of Name That Remake. And let's see if Todd can guess what movie we're talking about here.
All right.
Okay, so the original movie came out in 1934, and the remake was in 1998. The premise is the Grim Reaper decides to take a human form to learn about love.
Oh, that is, do both versions have the same title?
No, they do not.
Okay. Well, I know the remake is Meet Joe Black.
That is correct.
I'm trying to remember what the name of the original is. I am struggling with that. Yeah, I don't remember what the original is called.
The original is called Death Takes a Holiday.
Oh yes. Okay. Which is a better title.
That is a better
So,
title, or Meet Joe Black is
no,
better.
I think Death Takes a Holiday is a better title, yeah.
Okay. I mean, I've seen both of them. Meet Joe Black has its moments, and I do think it's better made than Death Takes a Holiday. Actually, Death Takes a Holiday I found to be possibly because of the use of special effects back in 1934 was very primitive. Maybe that's why I didn't like it as much. And come on, you can't really beat Brad Pitt, Anthony Hopkins, and Claire Forlani. It's a little bit of a problem.
I'm trying to remember if I've seen, I haven't seen Death Takes a Holiday, but I don't remember if I saw Meet Joe Black. It was back when it was first released. I haven't logged it, so I don't think I have seen it.
Okay.
It's, I know it's long. Isn't it
Yes,
long?
it's 3 hours. Yes.
Yeah. So
We'll
it's always hard to
we'll
carve
have to
out
send
time
Russell
for those.
Johnson on on to go watch that.
Yep.
For that 3-hour tour. All right. So, Todd, would you like for one final time this week to tell everyone where they can find the Forgotten Filmcast?
The podcast is called The Forgotten Filmcast. You look for that wherever you find your favorite podcasts. The blog is at forgottenfilmcast.wordpress.com. I'm on the various socials at Forgotten Films, film spelled with a Z. So we're on X, Instagram, Blue Sky, Threads, all those things. And then I'm on Letterboxd, which I love sharing everything I've watched on there. So just search for my name, Todd Liebenow, and follow me there.
All right. Excellent. And finding me is very simple. Just do a quick search for Movie Around Minute. You can find me on Facebook. You can find me on Twitter. You can find me on Instagram. You can find me on my website, movieroundminute.com. And if you want to send me an email, you can send it to movieroundminute@movierob.net. So, Todd, thank you very much for once again joining me. It's
thank you always, for having me. Always fun.
Pleasure having you on, especially since you always give me hints and leads to other movies that I haven't seen that I can add to my
That's
list.
What we're here for. That's absolutely.
Completely. All right. So everyone have a great weekend. I'll be back on Monday with a new guest. But until then, achoo.
Gesundheit.